thank you all for attending.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Plasma Call.
Carlo, Joseph, please start.
Yeah, so maybe we start off with what, you know, what we're introduction on what we're researching. What we're, you know, enthusiastic with Plasma, and then maybe we could do another round on, like, actually, before that, we can maybe, like, give a, I think it would be fun, actually, to start off with maybe talking about what one thinks are good applications of Plasma, and what it's good, like, what it could be good for, what it could maybe not be good for, and what one is working on when it comes to specifically applications. And that way there's some context for that.
So introduction and the interests for each one.
Yeah.
Introduction and interests. There's a lot of stuff mentioned there. Okay, well, I'll just first say what I think are good applications of Plasma, because I think that's sort of the interesting thing here. Obviously, payments and exchange are like the Plasma application, at least right now. It's sort of the thing that's most, you know, useful or novel, but and kind of makes use of this blockchain as a value store slash exchange thing. But other stuff that I'm really excited about is gaming in general. It's one of these things that brings people in, and it's simple. It's not threatening. You know, I'm willing to put $10 into a video game, and I don't really care if I never play that video game again. And you know, that $10 is just gone. That's fine. And so, the same doesn't apply if we're talking about payments. Like, I expect that my bank app doesn't lose my money. But I have different expectations on games, and so I think games are actually quite feasible today with Plasma, as Loom has just made very clear, and I think that people should start looking at that right now. I'm highly interested in getting a sort of Plasma kind of like an SDK set up so that people can just build these games without really understanding what the underlying Plasma chain does.
Plaps.
Do you guys want to go?
Sure. I'm David. I feel like with Plasma in its current state, it's excellent for supporting applications that don't require an incredible amount of interaction with like the rest of the like the root chain ecosystem. Just because the way things are right now with the root chain having custody. It's super great for modular systems. And then also, I would say I'm very excited about the potential for Plasma chains to kind of work like down the road. They can be more private than public chains. And so excited to see that explored more, especially with the Plasma Cash architecture, where users don't actually have to know about the entire information on chain.
The only thing that I believe what makes me interested in Plasma as a technique is the fact that you can settle many transactions, whatever they may be, whatever information it is, without bloating the chain. So, you know, like in the casual, let's say, Bitcoin logic, that you don't want to put any data more than what's necessary. And I believe that's a general problem with dApps, that the smart contracts, they store too much whatever on chain. So yeah, let's put just 32 bytes per whatever amount of time, and it's better. And yeah, payments.
Good. Okay. Well, it's difficult to add to everything was said before. I think you should add two parts. First is the ZK based plasmas or other constructions like the Vitalik proposed with posting all the data on chain.
Give some context.
Oh, okay. The ZK based plasmas as a plasmas where the state transition is governed by SNARK or STARK or maybe other future ZK construction. In principle, it is mainly an ultimate goal. You can make an invalid state transition, but you still have the data availability. An intermediate solution was introduced by Vitalik in a recent post, I think 2 weeks ago, in his research, where it says, well, post all the data on chain and make it as a public input to your SNARK, and yeah, good. Well, you bloat the transaction data, you pay an extra gas cost, but still you can aggregate a lot. This is a great approach, and I think the ultimate Plasma will still be somehow based on ZKPs. Another part that people forget, and we had this discussion a little before, original Plasma paper had a part about the MapReduce functionality. There are very limited sets of computation which are still viable this way. For example, what you can do right now is you can offload, for example, the SNARK verification off chain. For example, there is some game which is governed by a state, which the state is governed by a SNARK. And in principle, the only part you actually care is that the state transition is valid, and you can offload the SNARK verification off chain to some operator, which you can easily monitor because SNARK verification is 2 milliseconds. So easy verification and it's stateless. So this approach may work, but we should maybe focus more on it after we solve the payments and access problem.
Yeah, just to add to that, I guess a lot of people ask me what's the difference between Plasma and sidechains, and that also plays into the use cases. So in general, if you have transactions on a sidechain, you basically just need to calculate the amount that you need to bribe the validator, so proof of work operators with, and you know how secure your transaction is. The main difference, I think, to Plasma is that on Plasma, you don't do that calculation. The answer is you need to bribe the Ethereum proof of work. So we kind of extend the security of the Plasma of the mainnet onto the Plasma chain. That is not done with sidechains. And I think that works specifically for exchanges and all apps that have high deposits. So at the moment, we're an exchange. Deposit size exceeds the stake size of the validators, it rationally makes sense to steal. And that is not true for Plasma chains. So that's where these use cases could live.
I'm super excited about Plasma because of the, at least for now, the scalable payments and exchange type stuff. Because we are close, and I think it's really important for just crypto as a whole to, like, one, generate a lot more assets, and two, make sure that those assets are very easy to exchange. And I think that that will, like, facilitate the generation of value in our kind of, like, weird economy. And so, yeah, hopefully Plasma can play a part in that story.
So I believe we should take a more structured format because we're just like talking about the vision.
Yeah.
So let's set some like questions like between us to discuss and maybe.
Let's make sure everyone has what they want to say.
Yeah, there was an agenda document.
Yeah.
Very important
point. Yeah. I think it'd be good to definitely get into that because we have a limited time.
Can I say the question?
As long as everyone like went through the introductions that they wanted to make.
Do you want to speak?
Okay. For me, like right now, my principal area is that beyond what everyone said, which I do agree with, 100%. I think payments are important, and like definitely a lot of advantages over at least the federated sidechain models. Another major thing that I think could be very helpful for at least this ecosystem is that you're seeing a lot of Ethereum me toos and a lot of people that want to copy Ethereum. And what's interesting is that Ethereum can end up being a central point between a lot of different blockchains. Even if let's say you want to build a dApp ecosystem inside Ethereum, I think obviously that is much more advantageous because you do have people that the stack is there, the community is there, the developers are there. But even with Ethereum me toos, they're probably going to have to cross through Ethereum. And Ethereum can end up being like a central trading point for that as well.
All right, I have a question. So with respect to sharding, it is considered a layer one solution, like maybe mechanism, because the whole connection between the Bitcoin chain and the shard chain, it is built in the protocol and there are no gas costs for doing that. So I was like kind of playing around with the idea of like forking Go Ethereum or Parity and make it so that there's basically all Plasma operations free, okay? But in a way that it's not DOSable in the same way that how like the proof of stake Casper design would work. And so would that make Plasma layer one? Discuss. Does it make sense?
I think it Well, first of all, all of us are implementers of different kind of flavors of Plasma, and we'll not name any of those. We have the bonds on exits. First, you should define what is a Plasma operation, which should be made free. And in principle, what you're proposing is more like a Polkadot, if there are some special smart contracts which are free, I think it breaks the philosophy of the ecosystem. I mean, you can make the block spam as an operator, as a central party. Maybe you can make some other fancy stuff which you can like make out right now, but let's start without this proposal at least.
Yeah, it's kind of like the whole like shelling fence type thing where once you start making in protocol changes or like layer one protocol changes, where do you draw the line? I'd be really interested in seeing more like discussion about essentially coupling or like combining root chain block submission between Plasma chains, because that's a way to essentially reduce the cost of running Plasma chains without making base layer protocol changes.
So I think some of my concerns about like enshrining anything Plasma related in layer one is that like it adds a new like liveness assumption to Ethereum validators or people who hold value on Ethereum. Like you have to like the protocol says you have to log in once every certain amount of time, and like that's not a trade-off everyone wants to make. Like some people are even unhappy about that like proof of stake adds a weak subjectivity kind of. Yeah, basically that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Shanji right there. I think when it comes to changes on layer one, I mean, this is a little bit tangential, but gets to the point as well. I think when it comes to layer one and how it can help Plasma, I think, you know, there's a dynamic where, you know, we're dealing with different layers there and communications between them is pretty important. So, you know, that may require coordinating with, you know, a lot of the core Ethereum research. One topic that I do care about, and I actually don't know if it's on the roadmap, so maybe tell me if this is or isn't, Carl, is some type of calculation for basically the gas costs per block, and I think some type of metric for that. Can be really helpful on the Plasma side because it makes the more robust exiting games and reliability on that could be pretty helpful, but is not necessary for Plasma. But you know, you may see these dynamics where, like, you know, whether it be contracts or layer two type things, you know, can be helpful for layer one in the opposite perspective.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. I mean, the whole gas market is actually going to get revamped with the Ethereum 2.0, and you can kind of like read about that in Vitalik's, like he has a paper out there. And so, yeah, I think it should be more viable. It's definitely more consistent, right?
Just push it to stack, like some opcode where it like pushes, let's say, not even like all the blocks, like not storing all the blocks, like gas costs, but maybe like maybe the previous ones or the current one.
Why not? You know, like, that why seems not? Very reasonable. We should do that.
What is the change?
Basically, you push onto stack, maybe some opcode where you push onto the stack maybe you have assign a variable. Basically, what the gas costs on that block was.
Oh, like to read what the gas price is.
Oh yeah. Sorry. For context in the audience, right now doing gas cost estimation in contracts on recent blocks is difficult.
We have something like that where we assume that if there is more than one operator, they compete for the next block. Just think along this way. And then, you know, when the header is submitted, we can just do message gas. And then we save that and take the average over the last X blocks.
Yeah, specifically an example where that definitely is a good idea. But for exits, this can be beneficial as well, because that way you can have maybe relative bond sizes relative to the cost of exiting.
When you exit, right, you want to be able to pay for whoever is going to challenge you. You want to be able to pay for their gas cost. And so doing that is a little bit tricky, and you probably have to overestimate, and it would be helpful to have this kind of in protocol. It'd be nice.
One comment I have to make about that is, like, the current gas market is not designed to be, like, resistant to manipulation if people are relying on it for... To have an accurate metric of this is how much you have to pay in order to guarantee inclusion in a block.
it's very hard to predict gas prices in the future, as one might imagine, because we don't necessarily know. Like, there was, we've thought a lot about, like, let's make it so that you can send a transaction that's guaranteed to be included in a block in the future. But that gets so funky, because then you're like, okay, what are the actual gas prices? Like, there are weird manipulations that you can do. If you thought gas token was weird, this just gets very confusing.
So I was about to say that in my opinion, I'm considering implementing basically gas token. So the gas token construction, it exploits a market inefficiency where you can just buy gas at a very low price and you can reuse it at some later point. And so I was thinking that maybe you can have like a miner inside the Plasma contract, which just like makes useless operations during the night or wherever like the gas price is low. And so like if I buy gas at like 2 GWh like and I submit one block per like 15 seconds, maybe it costs 100,000 per year, which sucks. But if you bought at 0.1 UA, which is totally feasible, like with this inefficiency, basically the gas cost is totally manageable. However, you're exploiting an inefficiency, and the moment that other people also start using it, then this inefficiency goes away. So it is totally a hack that is temporarily. That's only a temporary solution.
And to be clear, these are all optimizations. It still works without this stuff.
Yeah, but still any optimization or just anything which reduces the inefficiency of any market, and Ethereum is largely a huge market, is still great because people do the same in other areas, and you need to do this.
And could be helpful for many other smart contracts is basically this dynamic.
Regarding the fee market, actually there is the market for gas, for the bonds, that you put up also, like when you're making an exit. So I would like to initiate a discussion on the incentives of miners front running challenge transactions. And like, how would you approach it? My current understanding is that you can do it with a commitment, but still that commitment also leaks information. There's the current effort on submarine sends that essentially you make a commitment that is more stealthy. I would be interested if you have an opinion on that.
Specifically, the commitments for a Plasma block or how from a Plasma block
how
to
avoid the question is how to avoid challenge front running.
Challenge front running with regards to exiting on the main chain or from
always to the main chain.
Yeah, okay.
Invalid exit. I make an
exit and somebody must challenge me. I put a 0.1 Ether bond. Somebody goes to challenge me. They make the transaction, the miner sees it, they make the transaction before the challenger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that means that they get the bond, right? The miner gets
right,
the bond.
Right.
This is an implicit, like, this is a fee on top of, this essentially creates a secondary market, which it complicates how, like, the miners can calculate their profits due to how, like, you're no longer based on this, like, gas model, and essentially it's based, like, it adds incentive to censor transactions. So you lose fees that are on layer one, but you gain on fees that are on layer two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And how would you model this approach?
Because essentially, what you mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong so I can describe it to the audience, is this dynamic whereby a proof of invalidity or some type of proof basically doesn't have a signature attached to it necessarily. Nope. Whereby,
I'm talking about the simple fact that a miner can simply, or another user, can monitor the chain, similar to the Bancor inefficiency, if anybody else is familiar with that, that essentially you front run a transaction, and
you can elect the penalty.
No. So I make an exit on chain.
Yep.
Okay, I put up a bond.
Mm-hmm.
It is an invalid exit.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care about that. We care about the economics regarding the challengers.
And then the miner basically publishes the exit.
Whoever. No. The exit has happened. It's okay. The exit has been initiated.
Perfect. Okay.
And now somebody wants to challenge the exit.
Mm-hmm.
They challenge. The challenge is a valid challenge.
Yep.
Okay. But somebody else comes and front runs the challenge. This means that if there is a way for people to front run your transactions,
yep.
You no longer are guaranteed to profit from the transactions.
Yes.
And the rational decision is to stop challenging, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm
claiming the same thing. Oh, basically, when you broadcast it, the person that's going to front run most likely is the miner.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Point being that front running, it directly impacts the security of the chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very likely does.
Because people will stop challenging if they get front run by the miners.
Mm-hmm.
And then the miners are in the perfect position where they control both the layer two simply by playing this game where they simply bullied people out of challenging.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely a risk with a lot of these things. There's multiple mitigations. You can do basically, I don't like this, but you know, a naive solution would be to, you know, do some commit reveal, whereby basically you commit to a hash, similar to a Foxcoin construction. You know, Jobono in 2014 wrote, you know, Foxcoin, you do something like that where you commit to the hash of whatever it is that you're going to do. Namecoin does something similar. There are significant issues with this to be able, in terms of complexity with the smart contract code. I think some type of model where you're splitting up the penalty or maybe pre-committing where penalties go to is probably shorter in terms of lines of code. So for example, you can assign, let's say, 50% of the penalty as part of this specific output goes to these sets of people, and those are the sets of people responsible for publishing.
But then you just made the challenge mechanism not trustless.
Yeah. I'm just saying that is a possibility if you already have someone watching on your behalf, I mean.
Okay, but trustless watchtowers aren't real, are they?
It depends what you mean by trustless watchtowers, but basically, basically you would have to do some type of commit reveal then as a consequence, and that does extend out the challenge period and probably increases the exit code by like, you know, at least 10 to 15 lines of code.
The Kelvin had a point in agenda about the submarine commitments. Kelvin, can you explain it in short? I read the documents and, well, more or less, I have one question which will need to be answered later.
Sure. So the problem with just standard commit reveal is that the fact that I'm committing is leaking information about the fact that I am going to make an action. I'm not telling you what the action is.
Well, you don't have to commit to what it is you're going to commit to, though. It
doesn't matter.
Still, you can front run the commitment. You can recommit.
Right.
If you cannot re-allow to recommit.
I don't think that's... So we might be talking about different things, but I think the strongest attack is not to front run the commitment. It's to notice that a commitment has happened and then go and check all the exits.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the point, right? So that if I'm a miner, the original problem was that if I see a challenge, I can just execute the challenge and boom, I'll see that it's a valid challenge, so I'll front run it and I'll take the fee instead of the person who actually did the work to spot the error and throw the challenge. So the first solution that you could do is make a commitment. So somebody is asked to commit to making a challenge before actually revealing the challenge information. The problem with this is that it leaks the information that somebody is going to challenge later. And so what they do is...
It does.
What?
Yeah, it does.
It doesn't leak that somebody will challenge. It leaks that somebody... It doesn't leak that somebody will challenge. It leaks that somebody made an action.
Correct.
It leaks the intent.
At least that somebody made an action, and because somebody is forced to make an action before challenging later, right? We've asked people to commit, then reveal. A miner can say, okay, I saw a commitment, so now I'm going to check it, and then I'm going to front run, and I'm gonna get my commitment in first. And so the problem with this is that it's the same exact issue that a miner, they don't have to do any work until somebody else does the work, then they can do it. They can spot the problem, front run it, and take the fee, and which kind of destroys the whole thing. So generally, the idea of these submarine commitments is that you make a commitment in a way that you're not leaking the information that you have made a commitment, right? So you basically send a transaction to some random address, and then you later prove that you made a transaction to that random address, and nobody can tell that you made a commitment in advance. And so the benefit of this is that you're not leaking the information that you might be planning to act later on, and so you don't have this front-running problem. But it is significantly more complex than not having this, right?
I think from my perspective is, I think, you know, given your worst case scenarios, I actually don't think it's that bad. You know, like if it ends up being the miner just ends up collecting the fees, that amounts to being burning the coins, right? From an individual's perspective. And I think that's acceptable because
I don't follow. Why does the...
There is no equilibrium in that situation because you... challenges will stop even though they are invalid exits.
Oh, I think there's sufficient incentive to do challenges anyway.
Yeah.
Like I'm not totally concerned with that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the cool thing about like Plasma Cash and Plasma Perm, these kinds of Merkle tree where you own a particular subtree, the cool thing is that you have a very strong incentive to challenge no matter what, even if you're not gonna, even if you're gonna not make any money from this, like your coins are at risk.
Basically, I think what we're talking about is what I think the implication, if we wanted to hone down on your concern, Georgios, is that if you can get what you want in terms of your goals, bond sizes decrease dramatically. I think that's the end result, because I think effectively, if you're talking about your worst case, it's possible that the bond size will get fairly large, and maybe you know, large enough that you have to be fairly capitalized in order to do it. And definitely, it's a research opportunity that I think will make a pretty big difference in terms of the end usability, in terms of whether one outsources one's exits, in terms of the in sort of, you know, like trading the coins, trading the actual value. So I think it is a really, really important thing to do. But given the worst case, I think, you know, effectively the bond sizes, if you increase it enough, then the probability of you personally watching it should be sufficient.
So then the problem reduces to parameterizing properly. And so I'm curious on the how would you properly parameterize both the bonds and the duration of a dispute period?
That's a really good question.
I totally agree. And I would be interested in a good like market analysis of how that would be.
Yeah, so the other thing is that there was sort of the scorched earth version of this, which was if you can prove that an invalid exit went through, you burn the entire contract down. And so it creates like a massive negative incentive for you to not challenge, right? And so we have this problem in Plasma MVP where this wouldn't happen in Plasma Cash. You don't need this in Plasma Cash. But in Plasma MVP, you have this problem where, you know, if I make an invalid exit for $5 or whatever, you know, 0.0 whatever ETH, then if it goes through, the people who take the loss are the people at the end of the priority queue. It's the people, it's not necessarily me, right? So it could be, you know, it's just some random person. And so that person would, they're the only person who's going to experience the negative impact of this. And so we can make other people experience the negative impact of this if we basically say we will burn down the entire contract, throw away all the money if you ever let this happen, which is like, you know, probably not a great solution, but I thought it was fun and it's a good thought experiment.
I think it's great. I think that there's like a general rule here where when you're designing these like economic, crypto economic mechanisms, you don't, socialized losses are generally scary because it's this kind of common goods problem, right? With this prisoner's dilemma, we, you know, it's not really gonna affect me. I'm gonna exit before them, so why do I even care about this $5 that's going to be stolen? I can exist on a fractional reserve as long as I get out first, right? That's those kinds of weird incentives where you share the burden of, you know, challenging or whatever it is, pretty bad. The better incentives are when you are directly affected and only you are directly affected. And so you have the person who is supposed to act in response to this is like very, very clear.
And I think bond sizing is a really important topic that I think even us are not necessarily experts in. I think it's something where, you know, it applies to a lot of smart contracts in this space. You know, state channels are another example of this where, you know, bond sizing in relation to gas fees are an important topic. And, you know, it affects a whole host of contracts. So if you're interested in or have an economics background or interested in this topic, it's something which, you know, everybody in the space would be very appreciative if, you know, you're interested in doing research in this.
Yeah, Calvin, the question I had is, there is still indirect leaking of information in a submarine case, because it's unfortunately due to the technical perspective how it's implemented. You do the transaction to some external smart contract address of which you know, because you know some data which you need to publish, so it will be this address for the contract will be recalculated. It gets to the problem if your transaction to this contract is somewhere, some fancy amount, very small, for example, it's leaking information. If it's an average, it basically just, well, if it's more or less like an ordinary transaction, especially in a high season periods when the transaction amount, for example, are high, it most likely means you need to have the higher amount to even start the challenge. And it becomes like another problem. The challenger should have, at the worst case, more than it would be just necessary to just maybe allow to front run you. Indirect loss.
And as a side comment, I think, you know, the reason why, you know, we do need a lot of people researching plasma and why, you know, a lot of people are making significant contributions is you need a lot of eyes on this. For example, one thing, like, I just realized this just now sitting here is, you know, attack vector, because, like, when you're talking about game theory, you need a lot of eyes on this to understand the game theory. An attack vector on the submarine is construction that I was just thinking of, and correct me if I'm wrong, this isn't viable, is, you know, I always, if I'm an attacker, I'm always going to publish a submarine proof.
Yeah, it would.
Like, you attempt to steal the submarine proofs. You attempt to steal the penalty by always publishing a submarine proof. I don't reveal it, but when someone else reveals it, I also reveal my submarine proof.
But the submarine proof has to commit to the challenge
information. Yeah. So I'm committing to my own invalid exit.
But then I'm.
You start an invalid exit and yourself prevent it.
Yeah. So basically, like, I publish an invalid exit. I also publish a hash of the proof of the dispute. That's useful because when someone else publishes a penalty, I can claim that I did it before them.
Oh, the submarine proof is very well linked to you, I think. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that, like, anyone in the audience can come up with interesting constructions and disputes on whatever mechanism that we're all coming up with. And it's something that's very, very important to do. And I'm not sure that this actually works, but, you know, it's an example of, you know, something which, you know, why the community, when it comes to smart contract development, is really, really important to, you know, get everyone involved and have a lot of eyes look at this.
Not 30 minutes, so maybe we should do Q&A.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Q&A would be fun.
Please ask any questions.
Q&A.
Question: the scalability of Ethereum. I think I'm loud enough.
Sorry, guys. Scalability of Ethereum with 1,000 TPS. How will it affect Plasma negatively, positively?
If layer one scales, will it make layer two obsolete? Is the question.
Not necessarily. It's really a bit deeper.
So my understanding is that anytime that you can commit less data to the chain, you do it. If you can do it, that's, like, pretty obvious. So there is always the need for layer two.
Yeah. I think that there are going to be different properties of the main chain and of plasma chains. Plasma chains are just going to have, like, you know, maybe it's tons of scalability and, you know, exchange kind of built in and maybe fast finality or something like this. And something that I was thinking about is, like, okay, does plasma work in a sharded context? And I was like, oh, well, there's actually a really simple construction which allows you to say, okay, I'm going to take one plasma chain and I'm going to hook it up to 10 shard chains. And then all 10 shard chains will be able to deposit assets into the single massive plasma chain. And so then everyone's able to do kind of like native atomic swaps across these different shards.
How does it work?
It's very simple. It's very simple,
like,
I promise.
It sounds like the vision, the dream, but I'm not sure how realistic it is.
Oh,
so I would love to hear.
One contract in each shard.
Yep.
Let me be more
one
precise.
One plasma chain watches multiple shards.
Boom.
The timeline for this, it sounds unrealistic to me.
Well, it might take
First we need Ethereum 2.0. Yeah.
Honestly, I prefer to be more practical.
Well, the thing is, it's scary to research something and then be like, oh, this new technology is coming out. Does that just totally obsolete all of what I'm doing? Jeff, I'm so curious.
It doesn't matter.
Give him the microphone. He spits knowledge. Yeah.
It doesn't matter so much about access to plasma from shards because, at least for fungible token flows, because you can just instant swap in channels between a channel literally anywhere in the ecosystem and a channel on Plasma anyways. So the only thing you need the connection between Plasma and the main chain for in terms of fungible tokens is managing net capital flows and arbitrage, which should happen just every once in a while. It doesn't even matter. Like, people don't even care.
Yes, an example of something similar was that you can hook the Plasma to the Morrison that just Ethereum flavor. And with some problems which arise because you can commit different blocks, different headers and everything, and it should be in time and available. But this is quite similar, so we can try this first, and then we'll see how it goes. Maybe some fancy market between the chains, we will see. Maybe between this XDAI chain with this authority but stable coin inside of it, swap it to Ethereum inside the Plasma. Let's make other fancy ideas.
I was under the assumption that the XDAI chain is a trusted environment.
To also extend your point from a different facet, state channels are also relevant in relation to Plasma, and will continue to be if you want things like instant finality, and can be probably likely be the front end interface at least for most people.
So I also have a completely unrelated question, which is, why are you guys spending time on all this RSA accumulator stuff when you should just verify your state transitions?
I totally agree with Jeff.
I actually would agree with that.
Directly conflicting with Carl's.
Yeah, but there's different perspectives on this.
So maybe we should explain.
I'm aware that I'm being contentious.
Yeah.
I got a slight disagree with that. Like verifying state transitions has you might get a low marginal cost eventually, but you always pay the base cost. But with something like Plasma Cache, you can get down to one S store per, which is 20,000 gas per transaction without any kind of batching thing.
One S store for 10,000 transactions.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. So it's one advantage that you can't get with.
The problem with this ZK based constructions, they should encounter for more than just cost of posting the snark, or valid state transition or something like this, any other construction. It also boils down, if you want one prover which should make your blocks, you should have the mechanism, in a case you don't publish the call data to the contract, you publish the block separately, you should have the mechanism to solve data availability. If you have competing operators, your cost increases, because to calculate the snark is not easy, it's not cheap, and now you have to multiply by the number of competing operators who should get, for those, they should be reasonable to get the profits from it, so basically the transaction cost increases. This is also an area of research. Other way of research, which you didn't talk today, we had some discussion occurred there, is how you can make the stateless block validation, which was a recent paper published, I think, thank you for George's for link, as research Edrex, yeah. You can make a block validator completely stateless, you can write it on mobile devices, you can have almost absolute liveness, hundreds of thousands of users. Not the balanced one. For now, we take some model vector commits, and we can discuss later why they're not usable right now. There are various areas of research. This stateless validation is great just because we want liveness. We want someone watching, at least someone, the same way as for Ethereum 2.0, you want someone to run this fancy hardware with VDF. You want someone to monitor the Plasma, just someone. And then it will work. Otherwise, we need to work on user experience validation and everything. So, yep. The more people can join the research is better. Research may be difficult, implementation is still great because you need to test so many things. How does it work? How we make the user experience? So just please join, even if you don't want to research. You want just to write the code.
Yeah, I think we always the space always needs better systems engineers and more systems engineers. In addition to your question, I think having a baseline using minimal fancy cryptography is good, and then having fancy cryptography used to make everything better, easier, faster, I think is a good rule of thumb in this space, and that makes a very strong measurable improvement of how things can work.
Maybe a personal story. So I got into this Plasma research as well, and I was kind of going strong on Ethereum-style contracts, and I thought there's nothing wrong with them. And then Kelvin wrote a bunch of interesting blog articles talking about how actually a ledger, tracks assets. It doesn't necessarily, contracts should maybe not be first-class citizens on ledgers. And the whole Plasma research has kind of led me to kind of rethink the architecture of Ethereum and kind of find that there could be a way more efficient setup where in Bitcoin you kind of have fat blocks but a thin state. In Ethereum you have thin blocks, a fat state, but we could go with thin blocks and thin state.
It's always a trade-off that Kelvin was talking about. They should be formalized.
I think it was loud enough, but still, this is a trade-off was Kelvin was talking about. Until it formalized, light client and light blocks, ideal scenario, but still, most likely there are trade-offs. Maybe there is another external computation powers that should be made to make some blocks.
And one fun Ethereum 2.0 note is that the first focus and the main focus is providing a massive stream of available ordered data that you can rely on and trust, right? This is, in fact, the most primitive, in my opinion, because it is literally just information that we have consensus on. And information can be interpreted in whatever way you want. So if you want a different kind of Ethereum, you know, EVM, or if you want to, you know, put Bitcoin or Zcash directly on Ethereum and use that kind of data stream, that's super cool. And in fact, it needs to happen. Please do. And we're going to see all of these alternative execution engine constructions probably pop up very soon. But we're like getting Ethereum down to its essence, which is very exciting.
So you're basically saying when the base layer becomes cheap enough, we can use Plasma to absorb other chains.
No, you could just make fancy constructions with Plasma VM. Yeah, something like this. Just you need a data stream and publish everything on the chain. No data availability problem whatsoever.
actually, if I can comment, like, I'm really excited about the data availability thing. But like, from a taxonomy point of view, like they've been called data layer two execution engines before, and it's basically like a mechanism which relies on the root chain for data availability. Yeah, so like we could call it Plasma if we want, but like it is useful to, I think, keep a distinction between things like Plasma Cache, which don't rely on that, and things which do.
Yeah.
Yeah, rollup would be an example of something that relies on Ethereum for data availability.
All right, so I want to start an argument here.
Oh no!
Oh yeah.
People have questions. Bingo, what up?
Thanks. So my question is, you mentioned a little bit earlier about the original Plasma paper and how you use the MapReduce mechanism and how that doesn't necessarily fit into most use case. I'm kind of curious, like, what kind of use case would it fit into? Is it still, like, necessary? Like, for example, we deal with time series data. Would that, you know, is that kind of that a use case? And then secondary question, the original paper has, like, multiple layers. And is that layering just for the mass exit mechanism? Is that layering even necessary anymore?
So that's basically right now, we're not even at that stage. The presumption is I think what we're realizing is the scalability benefits that you can get simply by having one Plasma chain is probably gonna be sufficient for the overwhelming use cases. The notion of nesting gives you the benefit of, you know, scalability within the context of, you know, perhaps, you know, you don't wanna engineering-wise, it's a lot easier to have computation that can fit on one server, right? That's simply like, if you ask any distributed systems engineer, like, once you have, you know, some state across multiple servers, the engineering challenge just blows up. And that's fine to do if you have no other choice. And it's sort of a model of how you can do that for a lot of state across different, you know, that goes beyond that. Right now, the problem sets that we're dealing with probably can be done on one, you know, high-powered server or a set of high-powered servers, or so specifically one high-powered servers, and you can eventually go into a set of high-powered servers by making nested commitments. We're not writing any of the code for that right now, simply because, or doing any designs for that right now, simply because it's not, we're not even seeing a need for that necessarily. The context for the MapReduce construction within that need is within that process is that essentially there's a problem in relation to a lot of UTXO-like constructions, whereby UTXO-like constructions don't do global state that well. It's sort of like, in terms of data structures, if you can only do linked lists and you can't do maps or arrays, right? Like, it's sort of like, well, what can you really do with this, right? When you're dealing with global state, essentially you need some type of, you know, global agreement or consensus. So it's a statement that you basically have the Plasma chain be processing global consensus. And that's basically what we're doing right now.
Yeah, regarding the MapReduce, maybe I shouldn't mention this construction, how we can offload the snark execution of chain. But in principle, as Kelvin mentioned, there should be either clear ownership of state, which you can exit. And in most of our cases, for now, the state is a value. If your state is something abstract, which you can live with having exiting like the previous state at some point and just saying, well, this is the previous one, which is the last valid, and I can just offload all the computation, and I'm fine with exiting like the previous, like the last valid state on chain and doing something with it in the worst case scenario, then you can put the computation inside. So you can make it like offloading computation of chain the same way as everyone wants to do with the snarks.
verify it on chain, with Starks verify it on chain, you can do something similar. It's the idea is not huge, and you can just try to make it. But very limited set of computations which you can use, and like maybe games can be done this way. Well, games can be done on Snarks at least. Sorry.
Cool. All right, 5 second argument. Plasma naming scheme is bad, and you should feel bad. Oh, yeah. So my, you know, we had this kind of meme naming scheme, right, where we went off Bitcoin forks. So we had Plasma Cash, Plasma XT. What else did we have? Plasma Gold, Plasma NG, whatever, right? So, and it's totally involved into this problem where in order to be, I mean, the idea is like capture this design that you've created with one name and refer to the design with that name. And so now it's been this thing where like incremental benefits, like tiny little improvements, are allocated their own entire name, which makes, you know, kind of no sense. And then also like people have been taking this as, in order for my design to be taken seriously, I need to assign it a name. And so you have this massive bloat of the Plasma namespace, and it's super confusing. I think it's just, like it makes it really hard for me to refer to what I'm actually talking about when there's like 18 different names. So I think it's considered harmful. I like the idea of naming things. I think that we should just be careful about, you know, unless it's something totally novel. Like I like Plasma Prime being named its own thing because it's a ton of work that's been done over the last few months put into its thing, and it really refers to a large improvement over Plasma Cache, but like micro improvements, right? Just designs that aren't well fleshed out. I feel like we should present the ideas, and then it's only when it's really solidified into a package should it be assigned a name. And I would, my vote here is that we take that naming scheme to heart, but I am open to arguments against this.
I think we're short on time.
Let me bring the mic to this guy. And while I bring the mic, oh, he got.
I just want to ask, in your opinion, for example, what's the best challenge time for the challenge period?
Well, that's the question. Is we actually don't know, and that's why like I think we can take a lot of the work used for state channels as of late. But that is something which is ultimately up to, you know, the user, the Plasma chain, and, you know, what type of risk models.
And if I may, very quick, you already said that, in your opinion, the best solution is to put this Plasma cache on one server and operate within, like, one super server. So you have, like, one operator, right? And in that point...
No, that's not necessarily the case. It could be a set of validators. For example, the most naive construction would be a round robin of validators, for example.
So it's like the peer-to-peer network?
Yeah, it would be done across, you know, some propagated peer-to-peer network.
You just want the entire state to be able to be represented on a single machine.
On a single machine, okay.
Yeah. The idea is sort of like on Ethereum, you know, you don't have one single server running Ethereum. Everyone replicates it, but it can be run on a single machine currently. With sharding, of course, you know, you have a more distributed model.
I'd like to just answer his question in this is like a slightly more technical thing, but I think the biggest challenge, like, we haven't quite figured out is, like, some people might disagree with me, is like proof compression for Plasma Cache. So like I think the two best candidates are like on the one hand using RSA accumulators, and on the other hand like proof compression using Starks, and like I think both have their downsides. The RSA accumulators are not quantum secure. They're not. They have like the engineering it is I think pretty complicated. Whereas for Stark compression, like SHA-3 doesn't run very well in a Stark, and like the Stark friendly hash functions are very expensive on chain. That's my personal view, but like I think if that is solved, like we get like the list of features is pretty nice.
Yeah, just to a little bit emphasize what Joseph said, you can have any set of validators for a new Plasma block, but ideally to plainly reduce the cost, you want your data to produce a block, and the place where you take all the transactions from users, you want it as central as possible just to reduce the costs. If you have competing producers, just multiply by the number of producers, the amount of fees you would want to expect from the block. Otherwise, it's not profitable for them to run the hardware.
So it's, again, a trade-off, but there are ways to, well, not ways to solve it. You understand every strategy, and most likely you just need a set of validators and build a signature.
What about censorship resistance? Like, if you have one operator, then it's not a feature. Yeah. Okay.
So my mental model is that, and it also relates with fees in Plasma. I believe that you should consider that your transaction is by default censored, and you should feel nice when it gets included. And this is what allows you to, like, any kind of transaction fees, they don't have to be in the protocol. Because I can literally go to Zhuangzi, I can tell him, you're my operator. By default, he's censoring me. That is the default. And, like, if he checks, has he paid me my five PayPal dollars this month? Yes, I let the transaction go through.
Yeah,
and this is totally, like, good for, like, the fee model, because it's totally independent. It's like you have a whatever service that you're providing, because you're the operator. Well, you must be operating something. You have some for profit. And, yeah, I believe that's the valid, that's the proper way to think of it.
And if you want stronger guarantees, change your root chain smart contract to be able to process it on the root chain as well to be reflected in the Plasma chain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I think we're running low on time.
Don't do it.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay,
this is just purely for redundancy purposes too. I think, like, you all made a lot of good points, and, like, all of us would love to go do more research on some of the points that you made, but we never got through introduction, so we only got half of your names to do for the research. So can we just go back and get everybody's names so that we can go research some of the points that you all made on our own?
Did some of you not, on the walking up, do the introduction?
We'll just do it really quick. Hi, Kelvin Fischer.
Joseph Hoon.
Shenzi.
David Knott.
Georgios Konstantopoulos, it's long.
River Kiefer.
Alex Vlasov, Alexander for a full name.
Johan Barbie.
Carl Flourish.
And I think there's a bunch of, you know, I don't want to discount all the other people working on Plasma. I think, you know, people like Dan Robinson couldn't make it.
Yes.
There's a lot of people writing excellent implementation. A lot of people, you know, like people like, you know, Four State, Walk, they're not represented up here, but definitely have been doing a lot of excellent work. A lot of other people projects, and I think, you know, a lot of people making comments on ETH research. And, you know, this is a very, you know, the community is designed to be very inclusive. I think, you know, it's called the Plasma, you know, implementers group, but it seems to be Plasma's mechanism designers group, and there's a lot of other implementations as well. Yeah, and they definitely, you know, if you do want to contribute, you know, I think there's an opportunity to be making measurable differences and positive differences as well.
ETH research and learnplasma.org.
If I may say one thing, like, lately I noticed that in ETH research, some posts, like, you open a new thread just to ask a question, don't do that. Just post a reply on the existing threads, because it's impossible to follow the discussion. There's that, and secondly, I believe that the actual contributions to this, like, not to sound hostile or anything, it must be technical. Like, try to search what has been answered already, because, like, there are a few good resources, and if there are not, like, we're compiling some which are pretty, like, all-in-one, but generally, like, in the classic forum mentality, like, don't ask the same things.
Maybe add issues to learn Plasma.
I sounded like really hostile, but, like, it is what it is.
And I think, you know, the this is an open community as well, but definitely keep it as technical as possible. I would agree with that. But, you know, this is a, you know, inclusive community. Definitely, you know, look at ETH research. We're going through the scientific process of learning how to, you know, do all this stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.